Welcome to Marketing FYI, a periodic podcast where Kevin Dugan and David E. Bowman, that's me, drop some knowledge on the latest and greatest happenings in the world of marketing. Kevin, what's happening?
How you doing, David?
I am doing great. Today's edition of the Marketing FYI is the Sum It Up 2010 recap. Hoorah! So we were both at Sum It Up. For those out there that don't know, Sum It Up's an annual conference, takes place in Dayton. A couple hundred people get together, talk about marketing, social media, technology, creativity, etc. This year we had keynotes from John Moore, Pete Blackshaw, Steve Lance, and Brian Solis, in addition to breakout sessions by fabulous speakers like Kevin Dugan. I got to be head cheerleader for the day, which was equally nerve-wracking and fun. And we had a few hundred people up here, and by most counts, it was a pretty great day.
Yeah, definitely. It was packed. I mean, it was 8 to 5, which is pretty full for a conference. Usually folks wind up splitting that up into 2 days, and there's a lot of content I would have loved to have caught that I wasn't able to see. So that's saying a lot for the agenda.
Yeah, I think one of the big complaints that I heard was we didn't have enough time to mess around, which I'm okay with. And the other was the salad wasn't fresh enough, which I didn't make. So I'm okay with that, too.
And that and the name tags. I think there was a big flash. No pun intended with the name tags.
Yes. The big, giant name tag controversy of 2010.
I felt that was a good conversation, though. So.
Yeah, I thought that worked.
It's worked.
It tied in with Steve Lance's Post-it adhesive story. So
I kept going back to that. That's funny you mentioned that because I thought of that, too.
All right, so give me the highlight reel for Kevin Dugan for the day.
Highlight reel. I mean, it was great. You know, Steve Lance stands out from his keynote. I liked a couple of things. His style, kind of walking around amongst the crowd and talking to folks. I think that was smart on his part. He got a pretty good reaction from that. But one of the things that he talked about, just going with your gut, is so critical, I think. I mean, I think it speaks to passion. If you've got passion about an idea, you go with your gut, you're more likely to be able to show that, and they align in that regard. And plus, I think if you start second-guessing yourself, a whole lot of other things creep into the system. So I felt that was a really great message that resonated with me. Looking forward to reading his book, too. Pete Blackshaw was great in a lot of ways. I mean, he's kind of covers a lot of ground real quickly, but his silo slide was perfect, talking about the fact that media can no longer be in silos, really teed up my presentation pretty well, and I was excited about that. But I mean, it resonated with me, obviously, because I see that happening. Digital is really, social and digital are both kind of killing the silos and causing a lot of other problems with organizations that are siloed, for example. So that was great, and I felt that Brian Solis at the end was a good recap, you know, talking about some of his experiences and with social and some of the things that he sees happening. Some of the breakouts, too. You know, I sat through Teradata's tips to implement a program.
Yeah. How was that? I heard good things about that one.
Yeah, it was really good. The slides were good. There was a social media guide that she shared with everybody, which I think is important, and she was really interesting just to sort of see her, how she integrated in a B2B environment, how she integrated social and started to make it work for her company.
And that was Aaron Fagan. Yeah, and they appeared to be doing some pretty interesting things. I know that they have some big conference coming up this weekend that they do in San Diego, so she was all panicked about was she even going to be able to get there to do her own presentation. So I'm glad to hear she pulled it off, and it seems like it was one of the highlights of the day from breakouts.
Yeah, it was really well done. Between that and a handout like she had, I think, yeah, you can't go wrong.
Candy,
she gave out materials, I gave out candy, so.
Hey, the candy looks good. I was in there for that. you missed out on the morning breakout sessions because you were presenting with them. I thought yours was one of the highlights of the day. Particularly coming on the heels of Pete's presentation, I thought you sort of took his global message and then brought it home sort of at a closer to the ground level, which I thought dovetailed really, really nicely. The other one that I know you didn't get to see him, but Artie Isaac was fabulous as always.
Sure. Yeah, I would have loved to have seen Artie again.
somebody came in late to his, and he instructed them that there was an open seat sort of past him on the other side by the wall. So he had convinced this person to kind of walk in front of everybody and in front of him, and then he jumped out and pretended to tackle in front of the crowd, and the look of horror on this person's face. He was like, oh, I just wanted to see if I could make it a little more embarrassing for you to come in late. Then he did it to another guy that was about 6'5", and he's like, note to self, only do that to small people.
It's great, too, because he said his, with him kind of focusing on improv a lot lately, it's he's always learning something himself in addition to the crowd, which I think is kind of cool to consider.
Yeah, he really sort of brought his A game. He was on, brought people up. It was a very participative session. I tell you who I really liked was John Moore.
Yeah, he did a great job. It's a good way to kind of kick everything off too.
I thought he really didn't talk a lot about tech and social, and really just sort of hammered home the point of be different, be remarkable, kind of find a way, and then let other people use social media to talk about you.
That's a great point too. I mean, don't focus so much on the technology or get so caught up in the technology that you lose sight of the bigger deal, which was exactly what he spoke to.
What you got? One highlight of the day that sort of stands out?
Man, I guess I'd like to say Pete. I'm a little biased, but you know, because we talk a lot. But he just really helped me have a great presentation. I mean, he even was nice enough that I sent him and his coworker an email during the presentation. I said, "You guys are teeing me up beautifully. Can I borrow the silo slide?" And they did, and I integrated it into my presentation. So that really helped out quite a bit.
I thought his presentation was, I mean, there was so much meat to that presentation.
Right, right.
That it was just one where I was constantly sort of scribbling down notes and trying to, as best I could, to soak it all in, because there was just so much. I mean, that was great.
Yeah, that's interesting, too, that you mentioned that, the notes and stuff like that. I mean, I've started kind of using Twitter for my notes, but I don't always necessarily go back and dig through my own feed. So I'm starting to hedge back and think, well, maybe I should be taking my notes electronically again versus written, which I used to do also. But I've also seen folks who are much more visual do almost a sketch of their notes.
Yeah.
If you go on Flickr, I think you can search for those and find them, and they're kind of cool. So it's almost like a poster at the end of the day, but with key points and stuff like that, and doodles and stuff. Anyway, what's your preferred mode for that?
I was going Moleskin for the day, trying to do a little bit of drawing in there. I was sitting next to a friend of mine named Scott Hull, who is a very, very visual guy, and sort of glancing over at his notes and like, wow, that's like a full-blown cartoon going on there.
Yeah, that's cool.
I think he could have stood up and presented his notes at the end of the day and gotten a standing ovation.
Yeah. Well, I think anymore, there's a lot of things that are kind of pushing folks more visually between the tools being more accessible and more powerful, and just the amount of information that's out there. If it's not visual, sometimes it's harder to even make an impact.
And I think as designated head cheerleader for the day, I was checking the back channel as opposed to trying to influence it. So I was trying to sort of drop in on Twitter, see, all right, how are people responding on this, and without really going in and trying to drive that conversation anywhere with my own two cents.
Yeah, it was a good day. I was tweeting through Empower Media Marketing's feed, which is where I work, and got a lot of good response from it. And that's the other thing, just, you know, live tweeting from an event like that, sort of have the approach. The one thing I always try and do is use something like TweetChat. And the reason why is, versus using my own interface, I tune out the non-event related content, and I also see other folks that are there that I'm not following that I wouldn't normally see.
Yep.
If I was using my interface. So it's a great way to network even without physically meeting the folks if they're, you know, there for the day.
And I know there are, I've seen a few people post basically a transcript of all the tweets from the day, you know, everything with the hashtag in sort of a summarized document. I've seen that a few people have posted that up on Twitter, which was kind of cool.
You can do that too. There's a site called What the Hashtag. If you register your hashtag with them, and you got to do it obviously within a close time frame of the event, but you can push those out in a similar format. It's really easy to do.
Well, one of the questions
that transcript.
One of the things you asked on Twitter, as a matter of fact, after the event was, why don't we get Cincinnati and Dayton together more often? In essence, I'm paraphrasing, not quoting. But, based on, Sum It Up was a great day, a lot of fun. Seems like every time we get the folks from down south together with the folks from up here in the north, a lot of fun stuff happens. So if not asking why, then maybe I'll ask you, how could we make that happen more often?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. I think just keeping other cities in the loop about some of this stuff. You know, I think when we did Digital Non Conference, for example, we teed you up and kept you posted on a lot of that stuff, and just making folks aware in each market of what else is going on and giving them more reasons to go up in addition to that event. And then I think having some events that are closer to each other. I joked around and said, hey, we've both got two really vibrant social media scenes, and if we keep this up, we'll just meet in Middletown. I don't have to stay in Middletown, but we can meet there, right? between that and Westchester, maybe having an event culminating in an event that's sort of a joint Dayton Cincy kind of thing would be cool. I know Cincinnati social media has been looking to do something in Westchester for a while, not just because Lally lives out that way, Daniel Lally, but because that's one of the reasons. I mean, we're trying to hit a wider group of folks, and I know if we're in that market, it's easier for you guys to come down. And honestly, I feel like the same is true with Columbus. I spoke up there a while ago, and again, it was one of those things where it was just so exciting to see so many folks, in the same frame of mind. So the more we can kind of do that, I called it the blogger exchange program. the more we can do that, I think the better.
Well, yeah, I mean, even if it's not, I think Cincinnati social media breakfast is a great example in that it's not an overly planned, over the top event, but still, it's a great event. I mean, it's well done, and something like that where it's there's not tons of flash and pomp and circumstance to it, but we pick a place, we get everybody together, see if we can get a sponsor, and let's go, and maybe make a concerted effort to sort of make it a moving target, even. So, hey, we're gonna go do a satellite in Columbus or in Dayton or in, wherever it might be, really making concerted efforts to just get people together.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I think, in fact, I won't make us do this on the podcast, but we should talk about that for 2011. So the first half, we just pick a date and make that the satellite date for both cities and just do something.
I think that'd be great.
Cool.
All right. So what else is on the marketing radar today? You got anything good?
It's funny, coming out of Sum It Up, obviously, I was so focused on paid, earned, and social and how they all mix together. I was extremely receptive when I got a note from Starbucks that their digital network was launching. I think it launched Wednesday. It was Wednesday. I was pretty in tune to that and wound up even yesterday going and checking it out. It's based on their in-store Wi-Fi. You can only get it in stores, and sort of a reason to get people to linger. I don't think any commuters are going to be able to take advantage of it because the Wi-Fi is obviously not the best. And you figure everybody in the store is using it. It's a bigger deal. They need to figure that out. Plus, the stores aren't ramped up yet. They don't have anything talking about the network or anything. But I took like a dozen screen grabs and checking it out. And what's really cool is they pull in like Flickr based on your location. They'll pull in photos that are tagged locally.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, and Zagat's is tuned into it, so you can get, dining info. And then they've got some exclusive content you can only get there, like some iTunes downloads, movie and book review stuff, content. And, of course, it's all e-commerce linked, so you can make purchases too, so there's a money trail at the end of it for them and their partners. But I thought it was pretty well done, and it was a really smart use of their Wi-Fi, especially since they've had a rap in the past of not having free Wi-Fi. I think all the local coffee houses got one up on them because of that, and folks started going to their local coffee house of choice, which I'm a big fan of buying local. But this kind of gave folks another reason to rethink their choice and maybe consider Starbucks again.
Well, yeah, I never understood that. If they wanted to be my third place, why wouldn't my third place have access to the internet?
Yeah.
My other two do.
Yeah, and it was so horrible. I mean, you had to be a customer, then you could get access. There was all this crazy stuff going on when they finally just said, okay, it's going to be free. It's like, duh. And then this network thing kind of builds on that, which I thought was interesting.
Well, this this extending the Starbucks conversation, but maybe going more towards a core brand discussion. So they announced this week they're going to start doing beer and wine. My gut is, you know, there's two sides to that, I guess. Sure, you can make a lot of money selling beer and wine. Is Starbucks passionate about beer and wine, known for that? Does it dilute the brand, or is it really smart?
Right, right. Yeah, you know, I get into a whole discussion around just the practical nature of the day parts. I mean, it's funny because Empower is based in Mount Adams, which is a residential slash bar community, and we had a coffee house at the end of our street that was only open for coffee house hours, and they missed the biggest day part up here when folks came up to drink.
Yeah, they ought to be open at 3 a.m.
Yeah, so it's funny because a lot of the restaurants even say, you know, we've got takeout, pizza by the slice. You know, they know that you can come in and get some drunken munchies if you want to. So you can get that day part spending money at their places. Anyway, I don't know, you know, I've been to Starbucks in Times Square late at night, but I don't know how many Starbucks are geared for nighttime hours and if people are used to including that in their evening habits as much. They might more so than some of the other coffee houses, but I guess my point is, are they open usually, or are people used to being in Starbucks normally when drinking hours are more common? You know, I mean, are they in there at night?
Yeah.
It's like now they have another reason to go there at night. I guess that's my big question is, as Starbucks has ingrained themselves into people's habits, meaning, you know, they're off the side of the highway now too, for when you're driving to get a drink to stay awake, really. You know, are you used to considering them at the nighttime? I don't know.
Well, and I know that I heard people when they started going to that model of, you know, side of the highway, okay, hey, are they trying to be a McDonald's? Now, to me, I love that because I enjoy drinking their coffee, and when I'm driving for 14 hours in a row or whatever, I love having that much caffeine pumping through my veins.
Right.
So it's a nice, you know, it's a nice convenient purchase, and generally they make them, you know, a smaller little toned down version of normal downtown Starbucks. But I wonder, you know, do they risk losing the people that go there to hang out and drink coffee and work on their laptop because they're bringing in people, if they can even get them there, to come in and drink? I mean, it's
interesting. I mean, clearly they're obviously trying to expand that day part. It'll be interesting to see if they pull it off.
Yeah, I know there's a Starbucks near the Dayton Mall that's open 24 hours, and you can go in there and find plenty of people that drank before they got to Starbucks.
Sure.
At 2 a.m. But
I mean, you bring up a good point too. Is the type of crowd, and will they play nicely?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, and it's, you know, it's definitely distinctly different crowds, or at least the potential is there. So I think that'll be interesting to see. I would love to have been a fly on the wall for that, the conversations leading up to that launch.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the concept of getting a liquor license across thousands of locations is pretty complex, too.
So
expensive.
Well, as for this podcast, do you want to share with people sort of where we're thinking this might go in the future, some of the ideas we have, and then you know, maybe some of the things that we might ask for from people listening?
Yeah, I think you know, from time to time we'd love to have some folks join us because you're going to get bored of us talking for sure, and just things that we're seeing out there that kind of strike a chord, things that we're reading, kind of a way for us to kind of frame our thoughts and get your feedback and whatnot so we can continue that process. But really excited to be doing this. I mean, you know, we've been talking about this for a while, David, and came up with a great name, Marketing FYI, and just haven't had a chance to do it. So luckily it summed it up. I think it was the last thing we said. We're like, we got to do this. And I realized summing up was a good reason to do it. So I'm excited.
Well, I am too. It's been 25 minutes and change, and I thought it was a blast, as always, every time I get the chance to talk to you.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to doing it again soon.
Well, hopefully we get some good feedback on this, even if they tell us we suck. That's okay, as long as they tell us something.
Yeah, that's good feedback.
Hopefully they'll give us a little bit more than that, but yeah, we'll see.
Be specific. How do we suck?
Yeah, that's Flight of the Conchords thing. Be more constructive with your criticism.
Exactly.
All right, Kevin. Well, I want to thank you so much for sharing some marketing FYI with me and the rest of the world. And we will catch up again soon.
Excellent. Take care.
Thank you, sir.
Bye.